At Macy's big New York department store this week, it sounded like an auction sale in reverse. Prices were going down, down, down.
The Sunbeam Mixmaster is regularly $46.50, and right now at the present time it is selling for $29.64. Wait a minute, just a minute. There's a new price, $26.59 for the Mixmaster.
You are listening to a new program presented by the NBC News and Special Events Department. Yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Great issues out of the past, problems of the present, and prospects for the future. This week, our subject is prices. You will hear the transcribed voices of Leon Henderson, Prentice Brown, Chester Bowles, the voices of housewives across the nation, and an interview prepared especially for Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow with Eric Johnston, head of the Office of Economic Stabilization. Now, here is Leon Pearson.
This week, prices are big news. The story began when Macy's department store on 34th Street here in New York's Herald Square announced it was cutting prices on more than 5,000 items. Others of the big stores promptly announced they would not be undersold by anybody, but anybody, and the price war was on. The customers jammed the stores in something like a Cecil B. DeMille mob scene. I was assigned to the story and took my tape recorder down to 34th Street. Here we are in Macy's basement, confronting a crowd, or in the midst of a crowd so big that it has been roped off, and people are standing in line in an effort to get next to the counters where various articles of kitchen goods are being sold. There's a salesman taking care of the customers after the latest cut.
All right, will you please pick up your check at the register and the merchandise right behind it. Next, please. That's right. Your name and address, please.
Here's a service manager pulled from one of the other departments to handle the crowd.
All right, folks, please step in. Four only, please. Move along. Move along. Yes, sir, you can take it with you. We have plenty of stock on the floor. That'll be all over here. Only a single line. You will not be allowed in unless you're online. Ladies, please move along.
What is this, a Mixmaster you're interested in?
Sunbeam Mixmaster at $29.64. I heard that Gimbel's Brothers was selling it at $29.95 this afternoon.
And here they might put it down again to meet the competition. Is that the idea?
Well, it is. It's $29.64 at the present time.
Oh, let's see. You're going to get it for a few cents less over here.
About 30 cents
less. I wonder if Gimbel's knows about that.
Madam,
I don't know. I didn't check it.
What'd you say?
Macy didn't tell Gimbel's.
Now, here's another markdown. The price of these mixers was $29.64, and a man is just now in the process of putting up a new price. Let's see it. What is it? It's, what is it, please? $26.59. I wonder if everybody's happy.
I'm bringing mine back tonight and coming back tomorrow morning and get another one.
Oh, I see. That's the way it goes.
And there's a treat you never can beat. You'll walk on air, you'll never care. Get your comfort and relief.
We've come across the street to Gimbel's. We find ourselves in the bargain basement, and here are nylon panties selling for 79 cents, nylon gowns for $5.99, rayon gowns for $1.69, and cotton slips for $1.59. Like Macy's, Gimbel's is cutting prices fast. I wondered to myself, what does all this mean? Can it be that Macy's has started something that may lead to a general drop in prices? I found four prominent retailers who were willing to give me their opinions. Now, here I am in the presence of four gentlemen who are the heads of department stores, retail stores in various parts of the country. They've come to New York for a meeting. They represent different areas. There are two here from the South, one from New England, and one from the area near New York. Now, I'm going to throw out this one broad question and see where we go from here. Do you gentlemen who are retailers favor what is going on in what is referred to as the miracle of 34th Street? In other words, do you like to see price cutting? Major Nam, what is your reaction?
Well, I can answer that question by stating that I like to see economic price cutting, the kind of price cutting which passes savings on to our customers, but I'm unalterably opposed to ruthless and predatory price cutting, which is of the kind that is going on in this so-called war.
Mr. Grant of Asheville.
I agree with the Major. But I also would like to point out that a lot of people are not getting the saving that they think they're getting. Their prices are going down, but when they were originally marked up, they carried an excessive markup. This is an old trick in the business.
Mr. McCargo of Richmond.
I think that in addition to that, a great many people are thinking that they are buying bargains all over the stores, when I have observed that in most of the larger stores, they are displaying merchandise at their regular prices and regular markups, as far as I can observe.
But there's been a great deal of publicity about markdowns of certain particular goods, and everybody is flocking around the counters to buy those goods. Now, that's a those are definite bargains, are they not?
Those are bargains, and they're known in the trade as loss leaders. I saw in one department store yesterday men's shirts and shorts sold at 59 cents, which is the regular price this store has had on these shorts for some time, and people were just mobbing that counter, buying those things, thinking that they were getting them at about 30% under the regular price when they could have bought them in many, many stores throughout this area and all over the country at the same price.
In other words, if I understand it, the loss leader has brought the people into the store, and then a whole lot of other stuff, which are not real bargains, is being sold.
That's correct.
You gentlemen may have noticed that last night in Washington, Representative O'Toole of New York made the statement that if department stores are able to reduce prices as much as 50% as they have been doing in the last few days, this proves that they have been gouging the customers. Now, what is your reaction to that? Let me turn over here, please, to Mr. Kirschenbaum of New London.
My reaction to that is that I don't believe the congressman knows exactly what the situation is. The public was never gouged. The few items that were sold at reduced prices were definitely a scheme to promote an additional amount of business to the stores. When these people have to replace this merchandise, they certainly cannot replace them at the low prices they're selling them for, and will have to bring these items up to their original prices.
Very good, thank you. I've got one final question, gentlemen, I want to ask, and that is, what are the implications of this business? We've been talking about retail price cutting, but is there a possibility that this phenomenon, this miracle of 34th Street, might have its implications nationwide and tend to reverse the inflationary spiral we've been suffering from in the last few years? Mr. McCargo.
I don't believe it will at all, because the cost of raw materials and everything that goes into making the merchandise that's being sold today have not been reduced at all. They're still at the same prices. There has been no unusual markup on this goods, and I don't believe it will have any effect as far as reducing the overall prices.
Then you think this is a temporary phenomenon?
I certainly do, and may result in higher prices later on when they have to go back and bid again for scarce merchandise.
Well, that's not very happy news. Thank you very much, gentlemen. At any rate, however the retailers may have felt about the price cutting, the housewives were happy about it. At last, in the stores that were cutting prices, they could get a bargain. But the price cutting was spotty. It didn't hit all parts of the country by any means, and it didn't affect some of the biggest items in the family budget, food, for example. I got in touch with some of our NBC correspondents around the country and asked them to drop in on the local food stores and get me some typical housewife opinion. First, to Dallas, Texas, here's Harvey Bogan at station WFAA.
What do you think of the price of food that you're paying today?
I think it's very high, and every time it gets higher every week.
Well, tell me, has the higher price of food made any changes in your family budget?
It certainly has. I have to do about things that are really necessary on account of the food prices.
Tell me, has the higher price of food forced you to change your diet in any way?
Really has.
Certainly in what has. Way?
Well, things that I would like to have and should have are just too high to buy.
What sort of items, for instance?
Meat, mostly, is the biggest item.
How about other prices, not necessarily food?
Well, I find them high, too.
Now, Raleigh, North Carolina. Here's Ed Kirk, news director of station WPTF.
Here's a lady in the pork department buying pork. What is your name, please, ma'am?
Mrs. Chrysler-Levitz of Raleigh.
Mrs. Chrysler-Levitz, what is your general reaction to the high cost of food you find in the grocery store these days?
Well, I think you feel sort of lost when you come in the shop. You see everything that's so high and you can't buy any of it, and you wonder why, and the average housewife doesn't know why things are so high.
Would you say that your grocery buying habits have changed a great deal over the last few months?
Considerably.
To what extent?
I don't buy beef now. I buy very little veal. I buy no lamb. Any of the things that you really need that are so expensive. You buy pork and hot dogs and hamburger and beans, things that'll fill in.
Now a housewife opinion from Connecticut. Here's Tom Eaton, news director of station WTIC Hartford.
I'm talking with another lady here in Wethersfield, and I noticed she's got a basket full, well, half full of groceries. Maybe it would have been full in other times, but right now it's half full, and we'd like to ask her, do you find the price situation has caused you to not purchased quite so much, or just how has the situation hit you?
Well, I have to economize a little bit, and as far as beef, I haven't had any for quite some time.
Those three housewives were typical of many whose opinions our correspondents gathered for me. They think prices are too high, especially the price of beef. And many of them think the government could be doing more to bring prices down. Here's one such lady in Peoria, Illinois, to station WEEK and Bill Houlihan.
Mrs. Becquerer, does the present system of prices under the OPS affect you or your family, your family's budget, or your family's nutrition?
Well, in a way, as the prices are so high today with anyone with a fixed salary, it does affect them.
Is yours a fixed salary?
It is. We live on a pension.
You live on a pension?
Yes.
You think that the prices could be lowered materially?
Well, it seems that they could.
Many people were thinking the government could do more. The question is, what shall that more be? When the government rolled back beef prices this week, many packing houses closed down because they said they couldn't buy any cattle at the lower prices. Some people suggested tighter controls. Some people suggested higher taxes. Some people suggested no controls at all. But the government man in charge, price boss Mike DeSalle, said the present system is working. Listen to him.
The question is being raised from certain sources today as to whether price controls have been effective. And our answer has been a most emphatic yes.
As the new week begins, in an atmosphere of uncertainty, it might perhaps be well for us to remember that we have gone through all this before. Perhaps we may even learn a bit from the past. Here's Bob Trout.
A few days ago, I was thumbing through a battered old account book that I borrowed from an aunt of mine. Listen to some of the prices she'd noted down. Pork chops, 11 cents a pound. Milk, 6 cents a quart. Potatoes, a penny a pound. Those were the prices my aunt was paying at the turn of the century when my uncle could drive his buckboard over to the grocery store and for a $5 bill, fill it up. The memory of those days belongs now to people who are old enough to be grandparents. But most of us can remember back to 1940. And for those of us concerned with our family budgets, even 1940 seems like the good old days. If you drove your family car to the grocery store, a $5 bill would still buy you enough groceries to fill up the back seat pretty well, if you shop carefully. But a war was going on in Europe, and government economists started using a word we had not heard for 20 years, inflation. The Bureau of Labor Statistics put out a complicated-looking arithmetic table called the Cost of Living Index. And the numbers on the index were going up to 101, 105, 110, to 116. President Roosevelt appointed Leon Henderson to do something about it. And when the numbers reached 116, they decided the time had come to call bingo. In April 1942, Leon Henderson made an NBC broadcast to explain to the people what this word inflation was all about.
7 million men are working in the war industries these days. And 7 more million should be at work by January of next year. And war workers, because they work longer hours and get overtime, earn more than other workers in civilian industries. Ordinarily, this would be something to shout about and cause dancing in the street. But right now, since there will be a steady decline in the autos, the refrigerators, the radios, and the gadgets of all kind, these extra wages worry those who have to fight inflation. Do you know why? It's because people have been hungry for goods for many years. Since 1929, many people never had enough. And now that their pay envelopes are full, they want to buy things. Can you blame them? Certainly not. But they have been bidding up prices for the last year. And if the extra income is not drawn off by taxes or savings, they will continue to bid up the price of living. And that is inflation. Put in still simpler terms, this means that when the average American housewife visits a department store, she carries with her $4 with which to bid on $3 worth of available goods. The bewildering truth, again, is that we are in for a much lower standard of living as the war progresses. Not because we are poorer, but because we are richer.
What it meant to all of us concerned with the family budget was that our load of groceries that used to fill up the back seat of the car was now down to a substantial double arm load. Leon Henderson called a general price freeze, but prices kept going up anyway. A former Michigan senator, Prentice Brown, was in charge of prices now. the numbers on that arithmetical table reached 125. That double armload of groceries was not quite so substantial. President Roosevelt issued his famous order, "Hold the line." It was a great experiment when the OPA started putting dollar ceilings on commodities. Prentice Brown talked about it in March 1943.
On April 1st, dollars and cent ceilings for the price of pork will go into effect. These prices will be the same in every store of the same class in the same zone. Since its inception, OPA has had to forge new weapons. Never before have we had anything like the present system of price control. During the war between the states, the price of eggs rose to $4 each, not a dozen, but each. Never before have we had anything like rent control areas. During each of the last wars, living quarters that rented for $26 in normal times brought three times as much. Never before have we had to embark on a general sharing program, although the history books tell us how the earliest settlers of this country, facing scarcities, pooled their precious supplies and apportioned them to everyone on an equal basis.
The experiment worked. Your double armload of groceries in 1943 was still a double armload in 1944 and 1945, minus, perhaps, a bunch of celery or a head of lettuce. Chester Bowles was in charge of prices in 1945, and while he was proud of having held the line for the most part, he was concerned with the inflationary pressures that made even that slight dent in the line.
Maybe that little rise of $1.60 in nearly 2 years on every $100 doesn't seem worth bothering about. But here's why that small price rise is worth bothering about. Most of you know how spring floods start and what tremendous damage they can do if they are uncontrolled. Well, the month-to-month changes in retail price levels represent the battle lines which OPA, with your help, is trying to hold now against the flood of inflationary pressures towards higher prices. For those pressures which raised prices early in the war continue strong and dangerous. Actually, they are increasing, not decreasing, as the war goes on. And just as the rise of only one inch in flood water threatens a riverside community, even the tiniest rise in the average level of retail prices, in spite of our hard fight to keep them down, is dangerous.
Price control started coming off in June 1946. The inflationary pressures burst loose. Those numbers on the consumer price index started going up like the mercury in your thermometer on an August day, to 135, to 141, to 156. In his State of the Union message to Congress in January 1948, President Truman expressed his deep concern.
As we enter the new year, we must surmount one major problem which affects all our goals. That is the problem of inflation. Already, inflation in this country is undermining the living standards of millions of families. Food costs too much. Housing has reached fantastic price levels. Schools and hospitals are in financial distress. Inflation threatens to bring on disagreement and strife between labor and management.
But President Truman's opponents said prices would level off of their own accord when the post-war supply of consumer goods caught up with all the excess spending power. By 1949, they were right. But by 1949, that load of groceries that used to fill up Grandpa's buckboard, that used to fill up the back seat of your car, that used to make a substantial double armload, it was down to a bundle you could carry out of the grocery store in one hand. Now we are in another era, another war. Since the start of the Korean War, that single bundle of groceries is a bit light. It's minus half a pound of round steak or a jar of mayonnaise. Now, where do we go from here? Is it inflation again or stabilization? Now, one of our Washington correspondents is going to ask a man who should know. Here is Leif Eade, and with him, Eric Johnston, the head of the Office of Economic Stabilization.
As a businessman who's been on the other end of government controls, Mr. Johnston, you certainly know that controls are not popular with businessmen generally. There's never been any spontaneous demand that a controller be awarded the Distinguished Service Medal. Men in charge of control sometimes just fade away, but mostly they're lucky to just to escape from Washington alive. So are these controls necessary?
Leaf, I sometimes feel as if I'm running through an obstacle course while the guns are banging away. But seriously, you might think of me as a lifeguard at the beach. People at the beaches are out for a good time. They resent the lifeguard who stands up, blows the whistle, and orders the reckless back to safety. He doesn't win votes for popularity either, but he's a pretty necessary decoration at any beach. Price and wage controls are necessary today in just the same way as economic life belts. Along with higher taxes, rent controls, and tighter credit laws, controls constitute our economic life belts. Without them, to help prevent a new inflationary spiral, we'd be in serious trouble. And the reason? Everybody knows we've been forced to rearm because the communists have been sticking their noses into the free world's living room. So we've had to take a lot of materials that we used in civilian products and turn them into the sinews of war.
Well, just how much are we laying on the line for the muscles of defense?
Well, we're shelling out about $1 billion a week. That's a big load to carry. And pretty soon there will be less of some kinds of civilian goods for us to buy. Yet we'll all have more purchasing power and more people at work making the hardware of war. We'll be paying people to make guns and tanks and planes and bazookas. And these aren't much use around the house. That's when we face our greatest danger from inflation, the great excess of purchasing power over available civilian goods. That's when the economic time bomb can blast us all in disaster if we're not prepared. So we've got to try to close this gap, or else.
Then you figure there'll be a new round of inflationary pressures?
Well, we're kidding ourselves if we don't face up to that fact. The pressures that create inflation are building up, but controls can see us through. Stronger controls can siphon off that excess purchasing power. Control means economic sanity as well as economic stability. Leave, take a look at what's happened to our military budget if you want to see why we need controls to meet the job ahead. Already the military appropriations have been robbed of about $7 billion since Korea. Inflation has shot up the cost of defense items by that large amount. Those $7 billion worth of weapons were destroyed even before they could be used in battle. So as taxpayers, we've got to dig down into our pockets and make up the loss through taxes. It's not only the military that has been hit. Do you know that every time the cost of living goes up just 1%, it costs all of us $2 billion? That's money right down the drain. Since the cost of living has gone up 10%, we've already paid a tribute to inflation of $20 billion. That's a hidden tax, just as if Congress had passed a $20 billion tax bill. We'll be bled white if this is allowed to continue, but it needn't happen if we're willing to live with controls for a while to protect us from committing economic and therefore military suicide.
Mr. Johnston, where do all these controls tie together? Where does the worker, the housewife, the manufacturer, the banker, and the farmer come in for a common stake in controls?
Well, Leaf, none of us can be safe from the ravages of inflation. Take the worker. If wage increases cause prices to go up, has he gained anything? No, for one increase cancels out the other. Their worker wants a dollar that will have a stable value in buying products. That's why we're trying to gear wages to the cost of living. It's the fair and equitable way to do it. Prices and wages are tied together like Siamese twins. We're trying to keep prices steady and wages fair so that we won't get into a wage-price spiral. The manufacturer's biggest problem is to relate cost to prices to keep production up. Inflated costs smack him hard, too. The banker, his operations are a barometer to inflation. He knows that if, in these times, he lends all the money he can, he's just throwing explosive fuel on the inflation fire, and he could be consumed along with the rest of us. The farmer's parity system gives him a fair share of the national income. But parity goes up when other things go up, and the farmer is on the inflation merry-go-round with the rest of us. For every element in our population depends on the other for economic health.
All right, Mr. Johnson. Now, what about the black markets that beef people are warning us about? They say that controls will bring on black markets and keep beef from getting to the people who need it. Is there anything to that?
Leaf, as you know, controls are only as good as the people who support them. I think the public believes in the whole that controls on beef are fair and in the interest of a sound stabilization policy. Let me point this out. Today we have controls on beef that we didn't have during the war when shady markets blossomed. Every legitimate slaughter in the country is now licensed. That will make it more difficult for meat to get into black markets. We want to make certain, in the interest of the consumer and the trade, that beef keeps flowing the way it has through legitimate channels.
How about the beef regulations?
Well, you know, of course, that beef rose 52% above parity. Under the beef regulations, it will still be substantially above parity. And what is parity? Well, parity simply means fair price. Who determined that fair price? Well, we didn't. Congress set up the parity formula and made it the law of the land. I think the beef regulations square with the parity conception.
Let's get on to the manufacturer. If his cost goes up, he can ask for higher prices. And then we're right back where we started. Where do you stop this inflationary business of a dog chasing its own tail?
Well, let's get this one thing straight. We're trying to hold prices in line. The stabilization policies we've set up don't allow for haphazard increases in prices. Obviously, it would be necessary for business to absorb some costs if we are to stabilize on the basis that is fair and equitable at all. That's our goal, fair sharing during the emergency.
Do you think controls are a success so far?
There's no doubt about it. Of course, they haven't stopped every price from rising. But believe me, we'd been in an awful mess if we didn't have price and wage controls. Remember how prices were skyrocketing upwards right after the communists crossed the Korean border? Prices were changing so fast that clerks in the stores had a hard time keeping up with them. But today, there's a difference. The latest available figures for the period between March 15th and April 15th show that the cost of living went up less than 0.1% in that month. That's the smallest increase since the Korean shooting started. But it would be the worst kind of self-deception to believe that the worst is over or that price and wage controls alone can do the job for any protracted period. We'll need direct controls, and we'll also need higher pay-as-we-go taxes, more restrictive credit policies, and rent controls to hold our economic defenses as military production mounts.
All right, Mr. Johnson, here's the big one. When can we expect to take off the overcoat of controls?
Well, when the time comes, we'll be the first one to suggest removal of controls. But you don't chuck your overcoat with the first warm breath of spring, and you don't plant while there's still danger of frost. If we don't have all-out war, I believe that we can get rid of controls in about 2 years. By that time, we'll be turning out more civilian goods than ever before. We'll have what we need for defense. Our allies will be prepared. And when we're over this emergency, we'll find, I think, that we've achieved a more bountiful standard of living than ever before. And what's more, Leaf, there will be a greater assurance of peace in this world.
You have heard transcribed the third in a new series of programs entitled Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, presented each week at this time by the NBC News and Special Events Department. Next Sunday, the people of France will vote in one of the most critical elections in their history. Tune in at this same time next week when Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow will bring you up-to-the-minute results of the French elections, plus expert analysis from Paris, New York, and Washington on their background and significance. This is Wayne Howell speaking.
This program has come to you from New York. Arthur Fiedler conducts the Boston Pops tomorrow on NBC.